This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Welcome to Bet and Breakfast, a podcast from BetSided.
Hey, does anybody want coffee? Who wants coffee?
It's sports betting for everyone.
I'm here to tell you today that the New York Yankees season is done. Stick a fork in them, it's over.
Lamar Jackson, I can't believe he's that low on the list that he's my bet for sure at this point in the season.
Early leans, best bets, props, parlays. If you can bet it, we've got it.
I'm taking the over on this. If you look at the last five games, this is a game waiting for points to be scored.
Tom Brady, I think everyone's heard of him. If Brady puts up the numbers, they have the 10th easiest schedule the rest of the way.
Get in, get out, and you're ready to go.
I think they're going to have to give him the award if Dallas ends up locking up this division and possibly even that number one seed.
And here are your hosts, Ben Heisler, Ian McMillan, Peter Dewey, Donovan Smoot, and Reed Wallach.
What comes before anything? What have we always said is the most important thing?
Breakfast.
Family.
I thought you meant the things you need.
What's good, everybody? Welcome into Bet and Breakfast on a Saturday morning. I'm Donald Smoot, got the homie Reed Wallach with me today. We're going to be going through a lot. There's a lot of stuff happening in the sports world. We have seven game sevens over the next 42 hours. We have five in hockey, two in the NBA. We're going to talk about all of that. We're going to talk about the NBA stuff that happened last night. Right, we have a couple teams going on to the conference finals already. We're waiting for those matchups. So we have a jam-packed show. We have a jam-packed sports weekend. Reed, what's going on, man?
Nothing. Like you said, two best words in sports. It's like the most cliche thing, game seven. But, I mean, it's going to be sick. I feel like second-round game sevens hit a little bit different because there's still a lot. Like, the volume is still there from, like, a first-round series. But they're more intense. There's more on the line. You're trying, obviously, to go to the conference finals in the NBA. And then these playoff series in hockey, I mean, five game sevens, can't really ask for much more, you know, the intensity, obviously. And, yeah, I want to hear, though, we're going to get into a little bit, but your thoughts on the NHL playoffs and all that, because I know you and Ian got, you know, rookie and the vet going. So I want to hear how that's going to pan out after round one.
Yeah, so Ian and I had – so we honestly kind of agreed on a couple of them. I would say that we agreed on maybe like four or five of the eight first-round series. I think there was only one series that we had where we had like the same team, same amount of games. Mm. Everything else we have a couple that we are like split on. Like, so even though that Ian is a Maple Leafs fan like to the core and he's just going through it right now, he had the Lightning winning in seven. So for betting purposes,
emo hedge if I've ever heard one.
Yeah.
Before it even started.
He had the emo hedge set up. So he has that. He also had the Hurricanes beating the Bruins. I, you know, because I had my third eye open, I had the Bruins winning in seven. So this is exactly where I thought they were going to be. And you know, we'll go through it a little bit later, but we are kind of tied right now. I think we each have, we're tied because, so he was able to get an extra point because he picked the Avalanche to sweep. I thought that was going to be a five game series. So he got that. However, I made it up because I said, I picked the Blues to win the series and the Blues.
And he had the Wild.
Yes, and okay. He had the Wild. So I had the Blues in the first round. So I think we're tied right now. And it's very funny that basically everything is going to come down to game seven for the first round. So that's going to be fun. And, you know, we're going to get into all that stuff later. I want to start in the NBA because last night we had two game sixes. And I even want to go I want to save the Celtics-Bucks talk because we're going to get to that when we talk about Game 7. So I want to talk about the last two Game 6s in terms of teams clinching to go to the conference finals. So you have – and we'll start with Warriors-Grizzlies last night. Warriors end up winning 110-96, close out the series. And it's fun. Like, I'm a Warriors, like, supporter. I'm a fan of them. Steph Curry's one of – like, he's my guy. But – there was a little bit like different kind of energy, you know what I'm saying? Like in Chase Center last night, I'm not going to say front runner, but like kind of, you know, like what did you see when you were watching the game?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not super sold. I mean, I've been thinking for a little bit now. There's no real like great dominant team this year. It's just a lot of like really good teams. That's not like a slight. Just like these teams are all like really good. I don't think there's like a bad team. But for the Warriors, I don't know. Like they did it in game four also where they were down the whole game and they pull away late and they're celebrating like they just won the series and everything. Then they go and I mean, they essentially lose by like 50 to the Grizz. They benched everyone and made it look a little nice. They lost by 35, I think. Then game six also like kind of a really lackluster performance for a playoff game, like must win. You lose, you're going on the road to game seven. I get they buckled down at the end, but I don't know. It's a weird vibe with them because they're not the same Warriors. It's a different team. They're pretty young outside of like the core, you know, I'd say four veterans. You know, you want to throw Looney in there. Besides that, it's a pretty new team. They're fun and stuff, but it was a weird vibe with them. I think that the swagger, it feels a little unjustified, if that makes sense. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know, like a lot of trash talk and stuff against a Grizz team that like they're without their best player and they're playing really hard. I don't know. It was just a weird taste in my mouth from that Warriors series. Really like unimpressive, I think, all around.
Okay, here's what I'll say to that. So, one, I still have the Warriors in the finals. I think that they are still going to end up in the finals.
Yeah, I mean, one, you know, you got four more games to win. Yeah. I think, yeah, just before, I still think the Warriors are finals contenders, but, like, that series, I was a little doubt. I thought they were a little overrated going into the series, and my concerns were a little justified. But we got to see who they're playing before I, like.
I will say this. The Warriors and not that like it should matter off of these like two guys, but they did lose Gary Payton, who ended up being in the starting lineup. He's their best perimeter defender, and once you take him off there, and like you have to start putting Wiggins in that spot to guard Ja or to guard whoever, you know, on the perimeter, you lose a little bit of depth there. And even last night, like they didn't have Otto Porter, who basically saved them in game four. Like he was the only one who decided that he was going to be a credible shooter. My thing with the Warriors, and I'm very, very curious because we've seen it one way and we've seen it another. In the Denver series, we saw Steph Curry be Steph Curry, right? We saw Steph Curry be able to score 30 points in 25 minutes. The efficiency was there. You did not see that in this series against Memphis. And my thing with the Warriors that I'm seeing right now is Steph is just not being Steph. It's not looking the same. The defense is still there. They're still like a great defensive team, and they can make all the stops and they can be in everything. But you need Steph to be the driving force because Klay is going to give you game six Klay, and he's going to come in clutch whenever you need him. But he's also at this point going to have those 2-for-14 nights.
Yeah.
Jordan Poole is still a baby in this league. And I'm not going to depend on Jordan Poole to give me 30 every night. So, Steph, offensively, you have to be driving the bus. He hasn't necessarily done that. And it's a different thing when you're shooting 16 threes a night and you're making 6 or 7 of them rather than going 5 of 16, 4 of 16 from three. That, you know, like we know Steph to be a 40% three-point shooter. He's been terrible these last couple games. I saw something like his true shooting percentage is at like 60% for the series. And that's just because he's been getting to the free throw line. Yeah. But it's starting to feel very like 2019 James Harden-ish, if that makes sense, in terms of like the efficiency is falling off, but the volume from everywhere else is still there. So the true shooting.
The numbers look good.
Yeah, so the numbers don't look as bad. But that's my only concern about the Warriors is that Steph isn't like MVP Steph.
I think you make a really good point about the depth of the team and, you know, the Otto Porter injury. It seems like he'll be fine long term.
Yeah.
Maybe they sat him out precautionary. They say Gary Payne's going to get reevaluated in like a week or two. That would be pretty crazy if he came back, but that's kind of my thing with this Warriors depth. It's not the same team. You know, if you're what they call like the PTSD lineup or whatever, you know, Klay's not the same defender anymore. And Steph, he's become like a fine defender, but Poole is lost on defense. Like the defense is kind of the big issue. They could score, but when you look defensively, it's becoming kind of a concern. And, you know, we'll get into maybe with the Dallas Phoenix series. But if I had to say right now, if they played Phoenix, I like how they match up with Phoenix, actually. And I would probably pick the Warriors. If it was Dallas, I kind of like Dallas to beat the Warriors. I think they actually match up really well with them. They won, I believe, 3 of 4 games against the Warriors this season, Dallas. I just think, again, you know, Dallas has these, like, they have the Dorian Finney-Smith, the Reggie Bullocks. They could kind of stick onto Curry and stuff like that, where the Warriors defense, that can maybe taper off, and, you know, Luka can maybe just get real loose and kind of just have his way with that defense. So that's kind of how I would see it. But I think you make an excellent point about the depth of the Warriors. It's kind of being tested here, especially because, again, if Draymond's not going to, and we're going to get into it, but if Draymond's not going to look to score at all, like, that's a really big issue. As good as he is on defense, being a total zero on offense, like, that is a big, big red flag. And, you know, you look at maybe potential Dallas series, that means you could keep a guy like Maxi Kleber on the floor and he could spread it out the other way. And all of a sudden the floor is open for Luka Doncic. You know, it becomes a really big issue for the Warriors, I think, defensively. So that's something to keep an eye on, the Warriors' depth, how Otto Porter's doing, Gary Payton and such. And also Andre Iguodala.
Yeah, and the Iggy point is real. I want to go to that Draymond point because, so I agree. I think at a certain point you have to at least look at the rim and at least keep the defense honest and at least keep the defense honest in that sense. Somebody who also said that was Kendrick Perkins, and I don't know if you saw, but so Perkins had said that Draymond that he hasn't been as aggressive as he was in the past, which I think both of us can agree, like, that's very true. And Draymond goes post game, says, you know, starts name calling and calls Kendrick Perkins starts calling Kendrick Perkins like an ogre. And Perkins responds on Twitter and says, "You not handsome or cute, and I've had a dime by my side before I had Jerry West on my socks." So I don't know if there's anything that's like, there's no actual basketball in here. But if you had Draymond or Perk, who are you taking?
In a fight or in a game?
Both.
Fight, definitely Perk. Fight, definitely. He's huge. He's like 7 feet tall.
He can't move, though. He can't move. Like, if Draymond gives him one of, like, a little here, like, I feel like Kendrick Perkins
I don't know. I'm going to go size in a fight. In a game, definitely Draymond.
I'll say this.
At least Draymond, like, he can't shoot anymore, but I feel like that's, like, maybe game shooting. Like, Perkins has never had, like, a touch, you know? Like, Draymond at least, like, has, like, the ability to shoot. So I'll take Draymond in one-on-one, but in a fight, in a ring, I'm going Perk.
I'll tell you this. So probably about a year ago to this point, I was back in Austin. I was graduating. It's grad week. And I go out to lunch and I go to this barbecue spot in Texas. And as I'm walking out, there's like a long line of people sitting in. As I'm walking out, there's Kendrick Perkins.
Really?
Sitting down, getting ready to go into this barbecue spot. And I had to do a double take. And so I was with my girlfriend's family, and they don't follow basketball like that. And so I was like, "Do y'all know who that is?" And it was like, "No." And I was like, "It's NBA champion Kendrick Perkins." And so it was cool to see him. But I look at Perk and I saw him, and just sitting down, I can tell, oh yeah, he's washed. Like he can't move. So I think that Draymond has a puncher's chance if he starts, like, if he can get the fight, you know, multiple areas, he could probably get Perkins.
So, like, Perkins early, Draymond late in, like, a fight. Like, yeah. Early round Perkins knockout, but maybe live bet Draymond after round, like, two.
Yeah, that's exactly.
I like that. I like that strategy.
That's exactly where we got to go. I want to go. There's another game that happened the day before that with the Heat and the Sixers, right? And James Harden looked terrible.
Yeah.
James Harden.
Who could have saw that coming?
I want you to give you a James Harden manifesto right now, because you have been saying it for months now. But for him to take two shots in the second half of game six,
that's crazy.
It's ridiculous, right?
Yeah, they traded Ben Simmons and got basically one with a beard, one with like a thicker beard. He didn't do anything. I mean, it was really crazy because he hit a few threes in the first half, and I was like, okay, like those threes are actually kind of huge, kind of keeping him in it because Embiid can't shoot. And then the second half, just it was done. It was a wrap. And you know, I wish I could act surprised, but I can't. This is what James Harden is anymore. He's not reliable. And I said to you before we jumped on, but like, I think the Sixers are in a really tough spot here, and they're going to, whether he opts in or not, James Harden's going to be on the Sixers long-term because there's no other options. And the Sixers don't have like a path to clearing up cap space. They don't have a path to really open up. Like you can't let James Harden just walk. You need to keep the asset. And Daryl Morey traded for James Harden to have him be part of the future of the team. And I think it's ultimately going to backfire. They, you know, the circling of assets, and you know, a lot of teams do this where they keep like kind of moving around the like similar chess pieces. This was like they're all in push. They landed on James Harden. They said, this is going to be our guy. This is what we're going all in for, to put him around Embiid. And it's going to backfire. I don't really believe, like, I've seen people like, he needs a full offseason to get his hamstring back in shape. Like,
he had a full offseason.
How long? This is the longest hamstring injury I've ever seen in my entire life. He's had now almost a calendar year to get over this hamstring. He got like a month off in the middle of the year because he sat out the end of his Nets tenure. Then he gets traded. Then it's the All-Star break. And then he's at like the first week or so with a hamstring injury. So like, how much longer does this guy need? And like, you're counting on a guy that, you know, hasn't ever really put in any sort of effort, like at least on record, to like really being committed to his body, not being in the club, you know, really taking this seriously. Like, I see people like, well, Chris Paul did it. Well, like, Chris Paul's like one of like the arguably the best guard ever, and like went vegan. You're telling me James Harden's going vegan all of a sudden? Like, I would be shocked if that happened. Sure, but like, this guy's entering, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure it's year 14. He's gonna be 33 when the season starts, give or take like
yeah,
a year or two. He's like, I looked, he's like, I think 115th in minutes played ever. Like, so he's quickly climbing the list there. Like, you're not getting those miles back. They're done. Like, he's not getting that burst back. So, like, yeah, he's, like, a good player, but, like, he's going to get something close to a long-term max contract. Maybe he's not, like, the super max, but he's going to be on the Sixers roster for the long term. And I actually think that if they're going to keep Doc around also, I'm still not sold on that. But, like, Embiid might want out soon. I would not be shocked if this year goes again. If they go back, they'll be fine. They'll win a bunch of games, but – if it's another second-round exit, like, keep an eye on what Joel Embiid's going to be thinking, because this is the roster, and you're going to bog down Tyrese Maxey. You have no other rooms to improvement because, you know, we get into the Tobias Harris thing, but yeah, this is who the Sixers are now, and I don't really see a lot of upside.
I would say there's only one person, or I guess there's two people who want James Harden to get the Supermax. It's James Harden and it's Russell Westbrook. Because
stop talking about him.
Yes, because if James Harden gets the Supermax, Russell Westbrook would no longer have the worst contract in the NBA. And it would be James Harden. I saw the number, they were saying something close to like $60 million yeah, at the end of the Supermax, like year five. He would be getting paid $60 million. We'll say a 38. We even from right now, a 37-year-old James Harden is going to be a terrible basketball player.
He's going to be worse than Russ now, probably.
He is.
Because of the way, like, they play. Like, at least Russ, like, I mean, he was pretty terrible this year, but, like, at least he, like, plays hard. Like, you know, he, like...
Yeah. You're not even going to be fake good.
Like, Harden's not going to be fake good. When Harden's bad, he's, like, very bad now.
You'll see it in fantasy basketball, because Westbrook can still go and get you some numbers on some nights. Harden is going to be one of the worst players in the NBA in 5 years.
But I'm telling you, he's going to get a long-term contract, and people are like, sure,
they should not.
He will be on this roster. I mean, you can't let the asset walk. They made
But this is in 2 years. He's going to opt into the deal this year, get $47 million. And so we're talking about,
we don't know that for sure, though. That's not a certainty.
The open market, I don't think that there's any open market deal that's going to give James Million $50 million. I think this is his best chance to get the most money he can right now and then try and work out an extension with Philly, and that's it. But I don't think he can go anywhere else and get $50 million a year. I think well, that
thankfully
door is
the
shut.
Only guy that would pay him is currently his general manager and traded for him. So
that's also true.
So we'll see. I'm just saying, I'm not going to be surprised if he gets a big old contract extension this year, just because I'm telling you, like, there's a reason why Morey went. They, I mean, you could go back and look.
Morey's an idiot. Offers. That's why.
Some of the offers for Ben Simmons were you know, there was like the Haliburton, Buddy Hield. I mean, like, that team might be in the finals if they got Haliburton, Buddy Hield, Harrison Barnes, and like a pick for Ben Simmons. Instead, they sacrificed some like their necessary bench players or role players like Seth Curry and Andre Drummond. And obviously Simmons wasn't going to play, but that's besides the point. I mean, they really – this was like their all-in move, and it seems – I think it's going to backfire. And, you know, you hear Embiid in the post-game press conference. This is what it's going to be like for the next several years. I could definitely see Embiid getting his way out of there.
Yeah. It's
Embiid's a sneaky, like, I want out guy. Like, we talk about, like, the Donovan Mitchells. It's a sneaky – Embiid's, like, a sneaky, not this year, maybe next year.
Okay. It's going to be very interesting to see how all this plays out in Philadelphia. I want to move on to the NHL playoffs because, as we were talking before, as we teased before, we have 5 game sevens across the next 2 days in the NHL. The first one is happening today. Bruins, Hurricanes. The Hurricanes are -135 favorites. The Bruins are +115. The total is at 6. That 6 goals. I said before the series that the Bruins are going to win in 7. I thought that they were going to have enough offense, that they were experienced enough to figure out a way to win. And this is a series where they've come back 3-1 to put themselves in a position to win a game 7, which is exactly the type of experience and just, you know, wherewithal, championship grit, whatever you want to call it. I thought that they had it coming into the series. It's finally showing off. So clearly I'm going to go with the Bruins. I think they're going to complete the prophecy, and I'm going to get an exact prediction right. It is. I think if I can get this one, then I'll end up catching Ian. I really need to get, because I think I have a couple winners, but the games were just off. And as you'll see here, I thought a lot of these series were going to be a lot shorter than what they were, and they've just drawn out.
I guess so. That's like that's the rookie part of you, right? Like you're still getting like your bearings with like an NHL playoffs. I mean, the margin, all these games are tight. All these, you know, it feels like the margin for error is so thin. And, you know, I love it that we got all these game sevens. But I guess we're going to go game by game, but I bet every game 7 under. So all 5, all 5 of them, I have the under. Game 7 under since 2010, 29-16-6. So nearly, you know, 2-1 you're talking in terms of unders to overs in game 7. You know, I'm not like some NHL savant. I don't really look at it all that much outside the playoffs, but, you know, obviously nerves are tight. Also, like, historically the refs let them play a lot in game 7s. It's kind of like no penalties. We're playing 5-on-5 the whole time. So, overtimes, of course, you could kind of get like a smaller number. So a lot of them are hanging around 6, 6.5, 5.5. So I bet every game 7 under in hopes of, you know, hopefully going like that 2-1 payout. So that's where I am at on all these games.
Okay. I can get behind it. The one place where I don't necessarily like see that, I don't see it in Kings Oilers.
Okay. Well, yeah, because Edmonton's offense, of course.
Yeah, Edmonton is straight offense. They're -220. They are let me check. Yes, so Edmonton, they are the biggest favorites in game 7.
Yes.
Right? They're -220. The total in that game is 6.5. The over on the 6.5 is even money. I think that's going to be the one spot where you can kind of expect a lot of goals. I think that's where you're going to get the back and forth. I do think that the Lightning and Maple Leafs, that game is going to be very, very fun.
Yeah, that's going to be a great game.
I think it's going to be very, very fun. Shout out to our guy, Ian McMillan.
So you have the Leafs winning. Ian Emo Hedge and took the Lightning in 7, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I had the Leafs winning in game six. I was all in on them. I thought that they were not the same.
That would have been a big one for you.
It would have been huge. And so, like, I felt like in a night, I felt all the pain that Maple Leafs fans had for the last 50 years. So I just think, like, it's hard. And what the Lightning are doing is very, very hard. To three-peat in any sport is ridiculous. And so I really feel like the Leafs have an opportunity to knock off the champs. You've played a lot of hockey. You start seeing it. You know, every time a team three-peats, you kind of see in that third year, the series get a little bit harder. The regular season wins come down because they're just trying to get through it and trying to get to that very, very last series. I know that the Leafs are favored. I kind of feel like they're the underdog, and maybe that's
It feels like that too, right? Like, yeah. I kind of like the Leafs.
I do too.
I think everyone's like, I listen to Ian. We did Daily Bet Slip yesterday, and he's like, we stand no chance. I know he's like, kind of like at the all like the pessimistic side, but like, I don't know, man. Like, doesn't this all set up? Maybe I'm like looking at like too optimistic, but like, this team, you know, back-to-back champs, the Leafs can't – they've lost 9 straight closeout games, like, at home.
It has to end sometime.
Yeah, like, you got to – like, this is, like, the perfect script to get off the shine. Like, there's not much separating these two teams. They're both very good.
When it comes to the odds, this has been, you know, the closest series. This series has basically been either, like, a pick 'em or like, a little bit juiced up. On either side, every single game, like, we're getting close to, you know, to like I said, like, pick 'em numbers. So
the
Lightning won in overtime in the last game. These games are going down to the wire every single time. I think that Toronto should actually be optimistic this time. But I understand you have PTSD, you're scarred, you can't let yourself get there. I understand trauma, right? I get it. So you just got to move on.
What about like game to go to overtime? Like just another barn burner. Probably get like what, like 3-1 on that? Let me see if they have it up by win.
Yeah. See what that is.
Like I could see this game like going down to the wire again. I don't see it anywhere. But yeah, you could probably get some like crazy number on that. I kind of like game to goes to overtime. Maybe I'll take that for fun.
I think another game where you can get that in is Stars Flames.
Okay.
I think
Stars scoring. That's the lowest total, 5.5.
Yeah, and this has been one of, as Ian calls it, one of the most boring first round series ever. Because both of these teams are very, very defensive minded, and so when you think about just the nature of Game 7, and that, you know, the refs are going to let them play, we've already had a 1-0 game in this series. I wouldn't be shocked if we had another 1-0 game, 2-1 game that goes into overtime, like. The series hasn't necessarily opened up the way that that you would think. You know, eventually, like, you have these two great defensive teams just going back and forth. Eventually, you think somebody makes a mistake and you have, you know, one game or that shifts the series and it starts to open up. That hasn't necessarily happened. I'm going to go with the Flames in this one. But I would not bet them on the goal line, on the point line. Now, the Stars, they're a little bit juiced up at plus, you know, plus 1.5. They're minus 165. So it's a little bit of juice, but I just don't see a way that anybody in this game gets up 2 goals. That's just a lot of offense, and I just don't see it happening.
Okay.
And then,
I can see that. It's been a tight series.
Yeah. And then the last game that we're going to look at is Penguins-Rangers. Rangers, another team, come back down from 3-1. And the Rangers have fixed their offense, or not their offense, excuse me. They fixed their defense because you have Shesterkin in the back and he's going to stop everything. But you can't expect him to have like a game one performance where he has 80 saves every single night.
Yeah, that was ridiculous.
That's a generational game. Yeah. And it sucks that it was wasted in a loss. But they fixed the defense. They are finally putting up a little bit of resistance to Pittsburgh. Sidney Crosby is going to be out for this game as well, so you have a little less offense.
Is he confirmed out for this one too?
Yes.
Okay. Crosby's confirmed. They're running out of bodies.
Yeah. So if you're not going to have that like offensive figure that's going to put a whole bunch of pressure on the Rangers defense, listen, this is Game 7. It's Madison Square Garden. You're gonna have the home crowd on your side. I'm gonna pick the Rangers. They were also my pick coming into the series. I had them in six. So listen, let's just get it done. And next week whenever we come back, I will let you know exactly how this whole thing plays out, because this is gonna be a stressful. If I can get, because Ian and I are gonna do the rookie and vet thing for the entire playoffs. Mm-hmm. If I can get a lot of points and maybe even go into round two with the lead, we're here. We're here.
Now you like know what it's all about now. You know, I've maybe seen it a little bit longer on the series. You got it, you know, you've kind of seen it a little bit.
Yeah. You know, I have my toe in the water right now. I'm ready to jump in. I'm ready to dive in. If we can get to round two in a very solid spot, we can get there.
Yeah,
and so I'm ready to give the update. Hopefully everything goes well.
Yeah, I took the Rangers before the series at like minus 120. I thought that was done, obviously. And then, you know, back-to-back comeback performances from the Rangers. Now I'm feeling pretty good. Obviously, like, have a better number than this money line. So I'm hoping the Rangers could come through for me. I also have my Hurricanes future. So I'm against you today, but, you know, at least one of us gets to win. I guess that's.
Well, not even, because you still have two more rounds to get through.
Yeah,
just to get to the cup. So yeah,
so it would be the winner of the Hurricane series plays the winner of the Rangers series, right?
Yes.
I like whoever wins the Hurricanes Bruins game. I like them over the winner of the Rangers Penguins. Like, you know what I mean? Like I like the team coming out of Carolina Boston.
That's fair. And I think
I'll probably bet that like series price also.
I need to check my my bracket, but I honestly think that we might be on the same page, because I think I have Boston going to the conference finals.
And I also like whoever wins the Leafs Lightning game, to beat Florida, like for sure.
We're on the same page.
I like my final four. There's too many teams left, but yeah, that's talking hockey with Reed.
Yeah, exactly. Listen, that's been Donovan and Reed. We've done that hockey. We're going to move on to
talk about stuff we don't like talking about, like basketball.
Yeah, we're going to move on to these game sevens on Sunday in the NBA. So first game is Bucks Celtics at 3:30 Eastern. It's going to be in Boston. Celtics are minus five. I think that that's a bit high, considering how all these games have played out. I know they're at home, and I know it's like game seven. I think being a 5-point favorite is a little bit too much for Boston in this spot. I don't understand. And listen, to Boston's credit, they've won the games that they have won. However, the first game that they win, they shoot 65% from three in the first half. Just unreal shooting. The second game they win, Al Horford literally has the best playoff game he's ever had in his life.
And they're down double digits going to the fourth, or like nine.
And Al Horford just says, like, I'm a superstar, so he says, hop on my back, I'm gonna take us there. That happens in game four. Game six, once again, Jason Tatum has the second most points by a Celtic in an elimination game. He scores 46. So I want to give Boston credit, because they've done everything that they've had to do to get to this point, and now it's in a one-game scenario. Anything can happen. I just think that Milwaukee has put themselves in a position to win. And if it hasn't been for like unreal performances, that if Boston's not getting an all-time performance from somebody, they're not going to win. And I don't think that you can bank on an all-time performance in a game seven, especially in a series that's been this like physical and just so much of a rock fight.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Boston's offense has been better, like process wise, but like, again, it's like, are they going to go nuts from three? Like, I thought, you know, watching the first half last night, I thought that Milwaukee was going to come back and win, because Boston was shooting so nuts from three. They have more weapons. The Bucks obviously missed Middleton, but again, it, like, the Bucks are the best player on the floor in a game seven. And we're going to talk about in the Dallas series, you know, it feels like Milwaukee. I don't know. It's really tough. There's not much separating these teams. That's why I lean Milwaukee with the points. I think you're going to get another barn burner. I just kind of lean with the team with the better player. I think that, you know, like you said, you need Al Horford to have a playoff career high. You need Jason Tatum to go for 46. Like, a lot of, like, people talk about how Milwaukee pulled game five out of their hats, but like, Boston had no business winning game four. So, like, yeah. we're just going to overlook that one. We're just going to know. Like, to me, especially in the first half, Boston, they were just hoisting from three and they were going in. But like, if they ended up getting a little loose in the second half, but like, Milwaukee, at least, like, they're getting to the line a little bit more. They're getting inside. Like, Giannis getting to the rim. It feels like he's kind of wearing out that Boston defense a little bit. Whereas on the other end, Boston's kind of like, all right, well, hopefully these shots go in. Like, it's like they're playing a more dicey game. Like, listen, Boston can come out and shoot 60% from three again and win. Like, that's kind of how this goes, right? But like, to me, it seems a little like the faucet's going to run out on Boston's three-point shooting. I think that's kind of what's kept the Boston in this series the whole time. I don't know, like Marcus Smart shot like 4 or 5 from three in the first half. Like, is that going to happen? Like, it's game seven. It's going to be tight. I bet the under, shocker. I bet the under in the other game too, shocker. That one's down like 5 points from the open. I think you're getting 1975 style basketball. I don't think either team cracks 100. I think ultimately it's going to, like, listen, I just watched last year this, like, the Nets play the Bucks in a game seven. I was at the game. It was miserable. And it was really tight. Like, these teams are really – like, there's a lot of parallels, I think, between the two series from last year and this year. Maybe not, like, the same style, but, like, in terms of, like, that – like, everyone keeps saying, like, this feels like the finals. That's what it felt like to me last year as a Nets fan watching Bucks-Nets. So, like, it does feel like this is kind of it, and it's going to be war. It's going to be tight. You're not going to see much separation. And, like, it's going to come down to – who makes a few more shots, and I just trust Giannis to go get a few timely buckets and win this one.
Yeah, and I was
Pat Connaughton. Guy's been playing lights out the last few games.
Listen.
Also, sick Grayson Allen. What are they doing? He's awful, and he's been awful. What are they doing?
So many reactions to what you just said. One, the Marcus Smart point is very, very fair. He started off 4 for 4. Tatum started off 4 for 4 from three.
Like, if that happens, you're going to lose. Like, you know, what are you going to do? Like, it's a major miss league. You just have to
throw your hands up. So that's one. Two, in terms of like Giannis wearing out the defense, if they keep calling these cheap charges on Grant, if I see Grant Williams and
you're
Marcus Smart
blocking fouls,
they are blocking fouls. Yeah. They're either blocking fouls or no calls, right? Because one, they're both moving, they're not set. They're both moving at the same time. And also on top of that, Giannis is actively like sliding away from them. Right. And once again, they are moving. They are not set. And so it's either a blocking foul or a no call. And I think that in game seven, you're going to get a lot more no calls.
I agree.
And so just like you said, I think this game is going to be under 100. There's that. Pat Connaughton, I bet him over 11.5 points yesterday. He is money. He's the only role player who's been like consistent and who is coming in. He hits all the big shots. He has like
he hits like bombs too.
And it's the crazy ones where he catches here and he doesn't even get the full shot up.
Yeah,
and it's right there. It's like an old man three. So Pat Connaughton, shout out to you. You're doing your job.
Like, really clutch player for them, especially when you're looking at like who else is in like that like wing rotation.
When Drew Holiday is going 5 of 22 and just putting up terrible threes. Yeah,
Drew's not built for like the Middleton usage rate. He's just not built for it.
No. And then your last point, Grayson Allen, he needs to be cut. Like he is so bad. Like I'm watching him and it's to the point where I'm like, obviously Allen's a better shooter, but I'm looking at him in this series and I'm like, are you better than Thanasis? Like, you are not good right now. I have no
idea.
He's
not making threes. There's no reason for him to be out there. There's just straight up none.
And so that's why you're seeing Milwaukee go to George Hill, because at least George Hill has experience, right? Maybe he's learned from 2017. He hit a free throw down the stretch, but like, Yeah, that's the only way that you can go, because Grayson Allen's giving you nothing. So I think we're pretty much in agreement on a lot of this stuff in Bucks Celtics. So I'm taking the Bucks to win the game. I'm assuming you are as well.
Yeah, but like I'm not confident.
Yeah. So you would take the points rather than
I would take the points. I like the under a lot. I'll say, like, if I had to pick a winner, I will go with the Bucks, because like it doesn't seem like home court is that important. Each team has won on the opposite team's court twice now. Yeah. So twice. Yes. Yeah, right. Yeah, each team has won on the road twice. Like, again, I don't see home court meaning as much in this series as much as others, which we're going to get into in a sec. But, like, I'll just go with the better player, yeah, like Giannis. I think he's hit a level. And, listen, if the Celtics win, like, tip my cap. You know, like, I'll side with the Bucks, though.
Okay. Now, a series where home court has meant absolutely everything.
It's been so important.
Has been Mavericks Suns. We've seen the Mavericks at home be a competent basketball team, and we've seen them go on the road into Phoenix three times and get the doors blown off every single time. We now have a game seven from the Footprint Center. Suns are a 6-point favorite. Once again, back at home where home court has been everything. Do the Mavs have a chance in this game seven? And where are you leaning?
I definitely think they have a chance. I mean, they're definitely outmanned, but it's game seven and you have the best player in the series. So like you can't really ask for much more. It's similar to the Bucks, not handicap. It's a little bit different than that, but like it's going to be game seven. So it's going to be tight. The Suns are starting to look a little worn down. Maybe it's just the home road splits that have just been so impactful in this series, but like, if you're the Mavs, this is all you could ask for, right? Get it to a game seven and hope Luka could just go off for one game. He's been ice cold from three. Maybe he could get loose from three and hit like five or six threes. If Chris Paul is going to play like Chris Paul has played since game two, so that's now four games in a row, he's been real quiet. I lean Dallas. I also like the under here too, but I lean Dallas. I think, again, I'm not confident. If Phoenix won by 20, it wouldn't surprise me. But, like, at least Dallas, it seems like they have their identity figured out. Phoenix looks a little bit shakier. And maybe I'm overreacting to that game six blowout, but I don't know, man. It's one game, and you have the best player. So, like, it's – you can't confidently, I think, take Phoenix here. Or is Phoenix just going to say, okay, we're the better team. We're back at home. We're going to feed off it. Like –
That's the thing. I don't know. So I'm leaning with you though.
While we're talking, I'm gonna look something up. You got it.
Okay. I'm leaning with you though. I'm taking Dallas in this game. I think Dallas advances to the Western Conference Finals. Now, I do think it'll be the total in this game is at 205.5.
Just dropping like a brick.
Yes. However, I'm gonna go the opposite side of you. I'm gonna take the over in this one. I think that Phoenix would be better offensively at home. And so I think that they break 100 at home. Dallas, I have them winning the game. So I think that you know, this game has a very, very good chance of hitting the over at 205. Luka, I think this game comes down to Luka hitting threes early.
Yeah.
Because he's gotten into a rhythm and – It's honestly so annoying because they've been matchup hunting with the screens, and he's been getting Ayton on the wing on either side and has been settling for step back threes the entire series. And those are just not falling right now. I think if he can get two of those early and maybe force Ayton to come up just a little bit more so that he can start to drive and kick, and now we're playing 5-on-4 below the free throw line, I think that's kind of the way to go. But I'm not sure, like, is Jay Crowder – what is Jay Crowder going to do? Because he's kind of – Jay Crowder is like
– Yeah.
He's been on both sides.
The role player's going to have to step up.
Yes. And so, like, if I look at Jay Crowder's numbers for this series, he's actually been kind of consistent. But the last two games, he had 3 points, 1-for-6 shooting, 1-for-5 from three. And then in game six, he had 9 points, 2-of-4 shooting, 1-of-1 from three. So are we getting the Jay Crowder of the last two games? Because if they get that, I don't see them. I don't see them winning, because this game is already going to be close. And the way that the Suns play, they are very, very invested in team ball. And so Jay Crowder is going to get the looks at the end of the game. He's going to get a shot, and he's going to have to make it. If we're not getting a good Jay Crowder, they're not going to get that done. And also, I'm with you. I just think having the best player in a one-game scenario, it makes a world of a difference.
Can't ask for much more. Just some, like, Game 7 nuggets. Since 2015, home teams are 12-7 in Game 7, so maybe a little bit lower than you would think. I think I saw a stat they were closer to, like, 75% all-time. So it seems like recently that number's been a little bit diminished. But big favorites, favorites of six or more, they're 19-3 all-time.
Straight up or against the spread?
Straight up. Shout out Matt Moore from the Action Network. I saw he tweeted that yesterday. But okay. So big favorites have typically – they've held serve. But in recent cases, you know, it hasn't mattered as much that, you know, the home team has been the favorite and, you know, expected to win. So, again, it's a one-game scenario. I think, you know, you're going to see a lot of variance, a lot of three-point shooting. If it comes down late, like, Phoenix has been the best clutch performance team in the league this year. So maybe Chris Paul and Devin Booker just take over late. You know, I think I said to you a few, like, 2 weeks ago, probably before the series, I said, if this is going to be a tight series, like, Dallas' late game offense concerns me with, like, Luka step backs. But, like, I do think game seven's a little bit different. And I think Luka is by far the best player in this series. So, again, I'm not confident. I'll go Dallas wins. So I guess I'll take both road teams. Maybe I'll go 1-1, but I could definitely see Dallas hanging around this game. Again, it's one game, so, like, they got what they asked for. And, like, the way Dallas plays with a lot of three-point shooting, like, there's a lot of variance in their game. So, like, I could see a crazy result in Dallas wins with Luka going off. Yeah. Like you said, if Luka gets hot from three early, like, Phoenix might be in some, like, real trouble. They might be, you know, because it's all variance. And, like, Phoenix go cold from three. I see teams all the time go cold from three in game seven. Like, think about that Houston series where they went, what was it, 27?
They missed 27 straight.
Like, that could happen to anyone. It could literally happen to anyone.
No. That can only happen. That can only happen to a James Harden-led team. That's the only 0-27 is ridiculous.
But, like, especially with the way Dallas plays, if Dallas gets hot from three and Phoenix hits a cold streak, you know, they go down 10 early, like,
oh yeah, listen, they can hit a cold streak. Yeah. They're not gonna miss 27 straight threes.
Two for 15.
Okay.
That could also happen to Boston. We were just talking about, like, it's the 3-point variance. That, unfortunately, like, we're trying to, like, predict a game, and, like, it's pretty much gonna come down to who hits more threes and who goes cold, because that's probably how it's gonna go.
Yeah. If we get to, like, you know, the second half, I'm curious how these things are going to play out. I want to see how Ayton is going to play, if Ayton's offensive is going to be, like, the dominant force in this game. Because if he's going – like, Dallas really doesn't have anything for Ayton if he decides to get going. Like, Kleber can't do anything. If they're trying to go small and outshoot them, like, Finney Smith can't guard him down low. So that's going to be very interesting to see. Yeah. All right. Let's wrap this thing up. We have best bets going on right now. I will give mine second. What is your best bet? Not just, you know, in the NBA, not just in the NHL, but just for today, for this weekend. Where's your best bet landing?
Yeah, big underdog in the UFC tonight. Finally got off my little cold streak. I was on a real cooler in the UFC, but I had a good pay-per-view week last week, so I'll try and put it together again this week. But I'm gonna go Luis Smolka. He's +245, massive underdog. I don't really know why. I think this fight's more of like a coin flip. Saying Davy Grant, who's lost his last two by decision. Smolka got knocked down the first round his last time out, but these two guys, they're like all finish. There's gonna be a violent finish here. 26-30 fights, 30 wins combined, all by finish. Smolka is a better grappler. He could win by submission. I actually think that's the most likely outcome. Grant has like eight of 13 wins. I'm pretty sure I'm doing this all the time in my head, but pretty sure it's 8 of 13 wins by submission. But the last one came in 2013. So kind of like an overrated narrative that Grant has like some grappling upside. So I like Smoke as a big underdog. I think there's going to be a finish. So I'll take a shot on the big dog.
Okay. We got some UFC action for tonight. My best bet is I'm betting on myself. We're going to go. We're betting on myself.
Love it.
We're gonna sprinkle this little parlay together of Bruins, Leafs, Oilers, Rangers. And those are the four games that I am most confident in.
And we're staying away from Calgary, like you said. You think that one's going to be tight? You have no interest.
Yeah, because I thought that this series was going to be like four-game sweep. I thought Calgary was going to get rid of Dallas very, very easily. They have proved me wrong. I now see that I know nothing about this series, so I'm staying away.
Okay, but that's smart.
But these are the four games that I feel the most confident about. I'm going to bet on myself to come in, steal every last point that I can, and beat Ian in the Rookie versus the Vet Challenge. And so I have not put it together. I don't know what the odds are right now.
I got you.
Okay.
Plus $7.99 at WinBet. So near 8-1 payout.
I'm with it. So if you want to tell big payout for this weekend, I got you. So that is my best bet. I'm going to bet on myself. This has been Bet and Breakfast, right? Don't forget Saturdays and Sundays, 11 a.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Central. Tomorrow, we have Ben Heisler, Peter Dewey on. They're going to take you through some more Game 7 stuff, probably recap a whole bunch of the hockey stuff that's going on. And also, don't forget, Monday through Friday, we do daily bet slip starting at 5 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Central Time. Listen, that's kind of like our, you know, our daily dinner that we like to prepare for you guys, give you guys all the bets that we're playing for that night, go through a very fun rundown. So until then, right, tomorrow, Ben and Peter. But until then, may all your bets hit and hope everything goes well.
Let's go.